This is a Lip Media podcast.
This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Woolgaroo-Coorba, Bindal and Wurundjeri peoples. The country we now call Australia was built on the stolen lands of hundreds of unique Indigenous nations, and we recognise that as white women, we continue to partake in and benefit from the act of colonisation. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. All right, welcome to Book Slut with Abby and Sam. This week it's my week, and I have picked. Actually, I don't really know how to theme this. Christian erotica, I guess.
Erotica. I mean, we all know what you're talking about when you say it. Holiest of erotica.
It was kind of difficult to find something that I wanted that wasn't just like two nuns fucking, you know?
This is a recurring thing that we talk about, right? Like, do you want the novelty where it's like a Christmas tree fucking a present? Or do you want actual erotica written for Christians? Is that what you were after?
Yeah, so I was trying to find erotica written for Christians. So, you know, preferably by a Christian author who was writing with other Christians in mind. And instead I just got like absorbed into this world of Christian blogs where it was, I mean, the fundamental question was like, should Christians be reading erotica? You know?
As in like, are they allowed to?
Yeah. Is it compliant with their beliefs?
Yeah.
Can you be a Christian? Can you be a practicing Christian and read erotica at the same time? And it's, I mean, obviously there are people that are like, absolutely you can, and people that are like, absolutely you cannot. And I find like the arguments for and against so interesting. Like, this whole thing was so interesting to me about the way that we rationalize our sexuality and the way that we rationalize desire and what comes along with that. And we'll talk about it a bit more, but so I ended up reading this short story called Reviving Leah. So it's volume one of, I actually have no idea how many volumes. I didn't get beyond volume one.
I mean, if it's anything like the Bible, I'm sure it will continue to go on and on.
And it was written in 2015, so relatively recent. And it starts with like a note from the author, which was really interesting to read through this note. And I guess we should probably, as we tend to do with these episodes, acknowledge our own biases up front.
Yeah. That seems like a good practice.
So I was raised Anglican. I think like my mum's family are pretty, they're practicing. They're what I would call practicing Anglicans. And when I was a kid, I went to Sunday school. I wasn't super, like, we didn't go to church every week or anything, but particularly as we got older, mum and dad definitely left it up to us to kind of decide what we wanted to do. And yeah, so I guess I was raised somewhat within the church, but not super religious. It was never really a massive part of my how I made my decisions in my life.
Yeah, look, I mean, you certainly haven't come across as though it plays a huge role over the past, what, like 30 episodes or so. P.S. I'm actually really religious.
I've just done a really good job of hiding it.
What a plot twist. I didn't grow up with religion at all, really. My mum grew up in like quite a strict Seventh-day Adventist upbringing, and then left the church later on and pushed back against it quite strongly. So by the time I came along, that wasn't really much of a factor in her life or my life. But as I've said on previous episodes, you know, grew up in quite like a sort of a spiritual environment more than a religious one, which, you know, there's plenty of arguments to get into there, but we won't. I do have one like very fond memory of going to like one youth church function as a kid. Because one of my best friends growing up was very religious, and so I went along. And it certainly wasn't for me, but I just remember I loved, there was so much singing and dancing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the religion I was into. It was just the musical theater.
Yeah. That's how they get you.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And that's similar. Like my memories of Sunday school is mostly based around their cinnamon rolls. You know.
Yum.
Like, I was like, yeah, this is great. But anyway, so I guess, you know, we're not experts. We're not theologists. You
are
know?
We experts in anything?
That's such a good point. That's just
if
a
you
general...
came here looking for like an expert opinion.
That's just a general disclaimer on every episode. Yeah. We're not experts.
Maybe we should just change the title of the podcast.
But anyway, so I was just interested in this area, really, I guess, and how people come to erotica and would write erotica. And reconcile that with their Christian belief. From what I was reading, a lot of these people involved in it and also kind of debating about it tend to be more on the conservative Christian side of things.
Mm.
I used to always say, you know, Anglicans are just kind of like a bit of the fun Christians. They always seem to just not have as big of a deal about a lot of things than Catholics and... you know, when you're going into Pentecostal and all of those, the different denominations. Anyway, Lexa Flynn, this author, starts this note saying that essentially her sexual relationship with her husband blossomed as her kids were getting older. And she kind of attributes this sexual kind of reawakening with her husband to reading erotica together.
Yes, Lexa. Yes.
As she said, the act of reading about couples having sex was a provocative eye-opener. It set me free in the bedroom. And she talks about how it challenged their conservative upbringing and the sexual ethics that they'd kind of grown up with. And she was already a bit of an author, and so she decided, like, okay, well, maybe I'll turn my hand towards trying to write erotica, and said... you know, she discovered that the situations and language of general erotica would turn off conservative readers. And her concern with that was like, how can they experience an erotic awakening within their marriages if the stories make them uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, how could I turn them on sexually without turning them off morally?
I am so intrigued to hear how she has achieved this. Especially, like, considering so many of the books we read, I'm neither turned on sexually nor morally. And look, certainly not intellectually.
I don't think... I would not say that this book turned me on, per se. It did send me down, like, a philosophical road. So, I don't...
Oh, like, I'm so here for this.
Oh, wait, I mean, we're going kind of back. I think this book is the closest I've come to, like... you know how we were talking about... erotica used to be about also ideas and,
yep,
you know, these other things. Like, there was a lot of ideas in this that I was like, oh, that's interesting. But essentially she says, you know, the ways in her notes, she talks about the ways that she went about it, trying to do this. And one of them, no brainer, always a married couple.
Of course.
No extramarital, you know, or unwed scenarios. And then the other one is that there's no adult language other than anatomical descriptions.
Okay.
So essentially no cock, no pussy, no, you know, and I didn't miss it. You know,
huh.
I didn't.
Wait, so you're talking like you, that she would say things like, he put his penis inside her? Is that...
yeah, kind of like...
that's an anatomical
like that.
Description, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, she says things like that, but she just isn't like, you know, fill me with your cock kind of vibes. It's definitely
balls
not that
deep.
Kind of vibe. Balls deep.
It's a little flashback for everyone.
So anyway, so that's the note, which I was already like, well, oh, this is intriguing.
I am so intrigued. Tell me more.
So the general story is, and I think we can finally award the most unsexy name award. The story is about Leah, the woman, and her husband, Doug.
Oh, Doug. Okay. All right.
And they met in high school. And Doug had, this is like a quote, Doug had rescued her from those sex-obsessed boys, but had also become her greatest struggle. And she essentially says the primary reason they married so early was because they wanted to have sex with each other.
Well, I just assumed that that's the primary reason that most religious people marry early, is it not?
I mean, I don't know, but I also assume this, but I'm like, maybe not, you know, maybe they like, I think there is just a general push to marry early, you know? Yeah. This is the from the book where she essentially does a rundown of their childhood goings on. They had been virgins when they finally tied the knot in college, but just barely. He definitely touched her breasts outside her clothing a time or two before marriage. She'd caressed his... She'd caressed his backside through the seat of his pants more often than she could count. Especially,
scandalous.
Especially while dancing or making out. Once, she squeezed the erection she couldn't help but notice beneath his jeans, her palm tight against it, her fingers finding its stiff edges. That feeling alone surged from her hand in a delicious thrill, rippling through her body, landing in a pool of heat between her own legs. Even today, she shuddered to think of that moment. Just one touch had brought her to a tiny orgasm.
Woo! Jeez. I mean, look, so I think there is definitely something to be said for, like, delayed gratification, and then that can be really fucking hot. I don't know about delaying till marriage. I mean, obviously. but I think as far as erotica goes, I think there is something that, you know, she's clearly playing with here, this whole, like, that building of desire and suspense. Like, I think that's great.
Yeah. And she says, and then she describes this other time that they were essentially dry humping each other and they both orgasm.
Oh, I can feel the sexual frustration. Like, I remember being a teenager and, like, not doing things, but, like, really, really wanting to.
Yeah. And so this thing is that essentially what's happened is that they've gotten married, they've had kids, and their sexual relationship has pretty much petered out. And
wait, so now... Is this quite autobiographical from what it sounds like?
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. Okay. So now they're going to a sex therapist.
Oh, cool.
And so much of it, and so much of this story, is built around guilt and shame, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she says, you know, after this time where they're dry humping each other, and they're not married at this point, they're dry humping each other, they both come, and then she says, though stimulating and fun in the moment, those experiences brought complex emotions into their relationship. Guilt, shame, the feeling of failure, of having let God down.
Yep. Yep.
So she talks about, in this part, she talks about struggling with going from being unwed young people who are being told that sex is shameful to then becoming a married couple and being told that sex is a beautiful thing to experience with your partner.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that would be quite huge, like whiplash, to have been brought up hearing the message over and over and over again that it's dirty, that it will make you, you know, unwanted and unclean. And then, suddenly, like a flip of one day, and you're supposed to enjoy it, and it's supposed to be this beautiful thing. That would be immensely challenging.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this line in it where she says, she hated herself for loving sex too much as a teenager, and as a married adult, she hated herself for not loving it enough.
There's no winning. There's no winning in this.
And I'd honestly, like, I had never thought about that. You know, because you think about young religious couples who get married early and you're like, you're getting married so that you can fuck. But you don't think about the fact that they've had literally a lifetime of conditioning, thinking that sex is shameful, it's something to feel guilty about, and then suddenly being told the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, I read quite a few, like, personal accounts that were in some news articles about this kind of idea. And one of the other things that came up is that if they're grown up in schools that don't have any sex education beyond like the bare minimum or teaching abstinence only sex education, then suddenly you do get married and then you have no idea about A, the mechanics of sex and how to make that work and how to make it enjoyable for both of you, but B, like the health side of it. So you're suddenly just kind of like thrust into the deep end with no idea. Thrust.
I think it's also interesting we have this, I guess it's a trope? I don't know. Or like it becomes a joke leveled towards people who are religious. Oh, it's always that thing about that religious girl who's a virgin but has had anal sex. You know, this kind of weird joke that gets thrown around in pop culture a lot around what is morally okay.
Yeah, yeah. I actually just read a book unrelated to this podcast, but I just read a book called Sex and Lies, which was a collection of essays about the sexual politics of Morocco. And that idea of girls and women having anal sex in order to avoid losing their virginity, because, you know, obviously, like, we've discussed virginity at length and how there are issues with that term, but, you know, using it in its sort of traditional context here, they would practice anal sex instead to avoid being classed as impure. So it's a really common thing, I think, that happens across various religions.
From a lot of what I was reading around the debate around whether Christians can read erotica, I very much think that the women who are saying we can't read erotica are also probably not the ones who are having anal sex on the sly.
They're probably not looking for loopholes.
But it is like this interesting idea of absolutely no access to sex education, because also your parents aren't talking to you about sex. And it's actually interesting. One of the things that I was reading was about this book called Addicted to Lust. I don't know if you came across this at all. It was written in 2019, and it's Addicted to Lust, Pornography and the Lives of Conservative Protestants. And it's about the pornography consumption of conservative Protestants, and it's saying, you know, 40% of conservative Protestant men under the age of 40 have seen porn in the last year. Even though this seems like a high number, it's lower than, you know, the national average or whatever, but the Protestant community thinks it's kind of like this massive addiction problem that they have in their community. And I saw it on this blog talking about it that was like, you know, these people watching porn, and then in brackets, yes, even pastors, you know.
Heaven forbid.
And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, they are generally in men. But it was talking about how, you know, the zero tolerance policy for porn means that those who consume it consider themselves are more likely, statistically twice as likely, to consider themselves addicted to it as opposed to other Americans.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, that makes sense, right? It's because it would be tied up into this idea of guilt and shame.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other thing that they say that was really interesting is that it's like, even though they condemn men's use of porn, they also kind of see it as a habit of masculine gender identity. So it's like this thing of being a man and you have to kind of struggle against it, you know? Whereas for women who watch porn, it's just like ostracizing, you know, like they can't, it's just not in any way accepted in any form, even as something that you should be struggling against. It's just like quite outside of the realm of women's sexuality to watch porn.
Yeah.
So if you're a conservative Protestant woman who does, then it's, you know, your isolation is just so immense. And then the other interesting stat they had was that the rate of divorces initiated by wives with the reason being their husband's porn use is more than double that of American women generally.
Whoa. Okay. Oh, dear. I mean, you know, for a group of people who are, you know, pretty conservative about sex, they're also fucking obsessed with sex.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Anyway, so in this story, they're at the sex therapist. And the sex therapist says a few things that I just thought were kind of gems. And obviously, this woman who's writing erotica is obviously on the side of Christians can read erotica, right? I mean, I think you can only agree. So obviously, her writing is going to include things about God's approach to sex and all of this, which, because we don't think about God in our day-to-day lives, these, so often I was reading this and I was like, man, that's a real hot take on that. So the sex therapist says, I believe God created sexual feelings just like he created the human body, not just for procreation, but for our pleasure. Those are gifts. No reason to feel embarrassed about enjoying something that he gave you.
Yeah, that's interesting. I also came across this a little bit in the Christian blogosphere, which, like,
I love the places this podcast takes us.
Like, I know. Honestly. Oh, I know. And yeah, similar ideas being like, well, you know, God created the orgasm. How can it be sinful? Which, like, sure, if that's, you know, what you believe in, like, whatever makes you feel like you're worthy of orgasming, because everyone is. But then it's all the rules around it. Like, it's this beautiful thing that God created, but you can only enjoy it in certain circumstances.
Yeah, yeah. And even kind of thinking about it, I mean, this is the anti-erotica side of it, is that the act of thinking about it is being disloyal and is taking you off God's path. Because the Bible sets out very specific rules around your sexual engagement. And if you are watching porn, then you are lusting after this other situation that is outside of God's plan. Which is just, it's so fascinating. I just...
Yeah, I find the whole, like, the thought itself is sinful. And that, because some of the other things that came up, like, in one site that was defending it, was like, it's fine, you know, having strong desire for sex isn't a sin as long as you desire it with your spouse and as long as it doesn't make you, like, covet other people's activities. Like, as long as you're not wishing for something that you don't do with your spouse. And I was like, wow, putting these limitations around human desires is pretty, like, I mean, it's bizarre to me because I'm not thinking about it, but, like, I could just try to put myself in that position and be like, you're like having a wank or whatever. Well, probably not having a wank, sitting on the train, daydreaming. And, you know, there's just like some real like thought police stuff happening here. Like, is the idea that God would be able to hear it? Is that the...
No, I don't think very many Christians believe that God is listening in to every single thought that you have.
I mean, I hope not.
I think the idea is that there is a certain way of life that you should be following, and there is a certain path that you should be taking, and that you, throughout your life, will be faced with various temptations, and that, you know, the temptations are the work of the devil, essentially, and that by prayer and by studying the Bible, you will find the guidance to choose the right path of those temptations.
Oh, man, I tell you what, it sounds like so much work.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
I mean, life is hard enough as it is.
I read this other thing that was essentially saying, like, part of the issue with erotica is that even if it leads to you and your partner having better sex, you're essentially, the reason it's done that is because you have been wanting something that your partner hasn't given you. And so therefore that is, you're still wrong. You know, like, you're still...
Oh, you really can't win.
But, you know, obviously there are so many problems with this idea of essentially thought police and infringing on the way people... even just like their desires and things they might not have any control over. But the thing that I kept on thinking was like, man, to be like inverted commas good Christian, it is so much reflection on your choices and your actions all of the time.
You would think that that would mean that maybe there wouldn't be so many wild atrocities done by the church.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, or incredibly bigoted people. You would think.
Mm.
But, you know, like this idea of, I don't think it's, I guess one of the things about religion that I like is this idea of having to consider your actions and the consequences of your actions. Obviously, some of these consequences I don't agree with, but like, but there's a general rule.
I do wonder as well, like, yes, but also how much of that is sort of like a rote script? Like how much of that is like, oh, I had a sinful thought. That is bad. I cannot think that thought, rather than actually critically like self-reflecting, you know? Like, yes, it's good to be like doing self-reflection, but not if you're just perpetuating the same stuff over and over again. Like that's not actually self-reflection.
Yeah. And I also think like having, I mean, if you're going straight from the Bible, it's kind of like, let's just take it with a pinch of salt, shall we?
Let's just take it with a bucket of salt. Let's all get into the salt and roll around. Speaking of the Bible, before you go back to the story, you know, just bring it back to this idea of sex being a beautiful thing that God has created. Did you do much reading about the Song of Solomon?
Oh my God, it kept on coming up. And I was like, is this like the sex Bible? No, essentially I didn't. I didn't. But it kept on coming up on these things where it was like, oh, if you ever feel like you want to read erotica, just read the Song of Solomon or whatever. And I was like, what the fuck is the Song of Solomon?
Well, I'll tell you what. I went and read part of the Song of Solomon because I was curious. So essentially it is a book of the Old Testament and it does celebrate sexual love.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially like a series of lyrical poems that are kind of like this ongoing dialogue between a woman and her lover with like a chorus who pop in every now and then to like... In my mind, they're like the chorus from Hercules.
I was about to say, it's always the chorus from Hercules. Bless my soul, Herc was on a roll.
Yeah, that's how I like to imagine it. Again, musical theatre. And it's kind of like, I mean, I didn't read all of it because it is long. But there's like a lot of stuff in there about like fertility and the fertility of the earth being dependent on sexual encounters and like human fertility and the human race being dependent on it.
Sexy.
And it's but there were some bits that stood out to me. So like, for example, at the beginning, it starts off with the woman and she's like, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Your anointing oils are fragrant. Your name is oil poured out. Therefore, virgins love you. Draw me after you. Let us run. The king has brought me into his chambers. Saucy.
Mm. I mean, there's something to... You know what we haven't done? Poetry erotica.
We haven't. I would have to work on my poetry reading skills for that.
No, you had me along. You had me along on the journey. I liked it.
Oh, thank you.
I like, next time somebody jizzes anywhere, I'm going to be like, your anointing oils must be cleaned up. Please take it into the laundry.
That shit stains. And then later it goes on, and this stuck out to me because it's the man saying this part. He's going on to the woman about how beautiful she is. And he's like, behold, you are beautiful, my love. Behold, you are beautiful. Your eyes are doves behind your veil. Your hair is like a flock of goats leaping down the slopes of Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn ewes. Ewes? 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 Is that what a female
is? Ewes? Ewes?
Yeah. Ewes. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn ewes.
Barem ewe. Sheep be true. It's you.
Blah blah blah. Your cheeks are like halves of a pomegranate. And I was like, was this written by Rocky Flintstone for one?
Literally the only part of that that made sense was the pomegranate thing. Because I'm assuming that's just like rosy and whatever, but like...
I mean, are you saying that the hair, like a flock of goats, didn't make sense?
Like, goats are notoriously very coarse, wooled beasts. And also, don't people hate goats because they're like cloven hooves,
yeah,
or something?
They, isn't aren't that they a... emblems of the
I
devil?
I mean, we're no experts, Sam.
Anyway, it goes on and on and on. And it's like, I know it's supposed to be like beautiful, but also I was like, mate,
just
what about her intelligence? Wow, I see where your priorities are.
We went in two very different directions. So he's just like, she's real hot. It's essentially a poem.
Yeah.
Right.
Essentially. That's all that women are good for, Abby. You have to remember.
That and fertility.
Like a beautiful vessel.
Ugh. So we might take a break and then come back and do the next part of the story.
Cool.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The next part gets sexy, Sam.
Oh, I'm excited.
So they're at the therapist. They're chatting through their issues. It's all very lovely. And the therapist is asking these questions like, do you have sex in any position other than missionary? No. Do you have sex with the lights on? No. Do you ever use toys? No. Like, I'm like, oof. Oh. Oh, and then she asks, you know, do you always come? Yes for him, no for her.
Oh, no.
But anyway, so she says, all right, well, I'm going to prescribe you with some activities. Essentially, you need to, like, work on this. My prescription is you need to have sex every day.
Great.
It's a lot, though. Like, and it's like, even if you don't feel like it.
I mean, just... homework isn't supposed to be fun, Abby.
Yeah, right. Well, you would get along really well with this sex therapist. Anyway, so then they're driving home and they're talking about it. Leah talks about how she felt the first time she touched his penis through the jeans in this little, like, when she had a little mini orgasm. And he's like, oh, you know, tell me about it. And she's goes silent. And he's like, no, actually, you know, tell me about it. She describes her orgasm in this way that I genuinely loved. Like, I mean, it wasn't sexy, but I just thought, out of all the descriptions that I've now read about having an orgasm, this is the one that I was probably like, yeah, that's like what it feels like, right? So she says, it was like a warm water balloon was expanding inside my stomach, getting bigger and hotter, and then it popped and sent a whole flood of heat through my body.
Well, there you go.
And I was kind of like, that is kind of, you do get that, like,
yeah.
Like the
that
build.
Like swelling. Yeah.
Like
I, yeah, it's accurate.
Yeah. I mean, again, not like super sexy or whatever, but I was like, yeah, okay. Anyway, and then he pulls over and she's like, realizes that he's hard, and they make out in the car park. And she's like, man, I could almost, you know, have sex with my husband in the car park, but obviously they don't because we're not quite there yet.
Baby steps.
I wonder if volume 8 is just them, like, going to a sex dungeon. You know, like...
I hope so. I hope it, like, progresses to that point.
So they're making out in the car, and then she's all like, take me home, Doug. Take me home.
Sorry. Doug.
Doug. I mean, can you imagine... apologies for the Dougs out there, but can you sexily... talk to a dog?
I was about to try and then I can't. Even like being like, Doug. Like, yeah.
Go, yes, Doug, yes.
No, stop it.
Anyway, so she's like, take me home, Doug. Take me home and take me to bed. And then there's this like little side note where she's like, we've got 45 minutes before I need to pick up the kid, so we're good to go. But anyway, and then they have sex during the daytime, which they haven't done since they were like on their honeymoon. And I was like, that's lovely.
Beautiful.
Also, she says things like, he has the same familiar light cologne he'd been wearing since they first dated. They started dating when they were teenagers.
Oh my god.
Is he still wearing like Lynx Africa?
That's... Yeah, that's not okay. You need to upgrade.
Or was he like one of those teenagers that wears like legit cologne and thinks that they're cool? Like, oh, neither option is good.
No, they're both bad.
And then she makes this comment about how she's self-conscious, like when they're getting undressed and whatever, which is another thing we haven't really spoken about on the podcast. She says she'd always been a little self-conscious about her large pink nipples. She thought they were too pale for her skin tone and too big. And I was like, we really do not discuss in sexual conversations in general how different everybody's nipples are.
Oh, they're so varied. And I can relate to this sentiment because I've always been very self-conscious about my nipples, having really big boobs. Mm. The nipple, the areola area is also like big. They're proportionate. And it's, yeah, I think there's so much of the imagery we see are these like perfectly, like little nipples. But you know what I mean, though?
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely. You just don't get that much variation.
Something else that makes me think of is like this idea, which is really pervasive in Christianity. And also I think, you know, it sort of seeps into just, you know, general collective mindset, is this idea of women's bodies being inherently kind of sinful in that they tempt men into sin. And so I wonder about, like, they're so loud.
What is that? It sounds like a car.
It's a helicopter. There's so many of them. And so, where was I? Oh yeah. And so I wonder how much of the self-consciousness about her body is kind of tied to the shame of it being like this lustful, overly sexualized thing that is the, you know, the reason for the demise of men.
Yeah. But anyway, so she's like taking her shirt off. She's all like, oh, my nipples. And then she seems to get over that pretty quickly because the next bit is still straddling her. He leaned into her cleavage. She knew what he wanted. Leah took hold of her breasts from the sides and pressed them into his face, smothering him with her body.
Wow. I was not expecting to check off motorboating off my bingo card this episode.
And then he's like going at her breasts. And then she reached his belt, inserted her fingers into the waistline of his jeans and yanked him forward. Doug, she said, her voice quivering with enthusiasm.
Doug.
Dag. It's like salad fingers. Oh, no. I was so right. That's so much more sexier. Dag. Dag. But wait, it gets better. Doug, she said, her voice quivering with enthusiasm. Yeah, babe. He was almost panting. Do me.
Nice.
Do me.
Doug.
Doug.
Do me,
Doug. Do me. And then she keeps her skirt on and he's all like, skirt on. And she's like, yeah, let's keep the skirt on.
Yeah, that's hot. I'm into it.
Yeah, absolutely. She flipped the fabric up to give him another glimpse between her legs. It had been a few days since she'd trimmed, but she didn't care.
Yes.
And then she says, do me like we're still in high school.
Oh, is it allowed to fantasize about, like, you're fantasizing about your spouse, but you're fantasizing about your spouse when you weren't married? Is that allowed?
Well, they have this conversation afterwards. They have a conversation about thinking about it when they were in high school and it wasn't allowed really turned her on. So she says, you know, I was imagining us doing this like we were still in high school on top of my bed, like before we were married. It felt naughty. Is that bad? And he says, if it makes you react like that, no way it's bad.
Well, using that line of argument, I feel like that opens up a world of possibilities.
But then I have, oh, she does use the term manhood. I just realized it's not like penis. Manhood. Ugh.
Yeah.
Not a fan of manhood. But anyway, so it says, plunging his manhood back inside her, then out slowly, then in again with a powerful motion. He wedged his hands between her backside and the comforter, clutching her behind as he thrusted in a tighter and tighter rhythm until, with an animal-like grunt, he climaxed inside her. Doug's body bucked in a rapturous spasm.
Did she come, though?
Well, that was her cue. She imagined his ejaculate streaming against the walls of her vagina. Felt it...
Sorry to everyone who's, like, aroused by that, but...
I mean, I have never once... When somebody has jizzed inside me, I have never once imagined their jizz inside of me. And, I mean, I've never done it, but also I don't think I would be turned on by it.
I try not to think about, like, the realities of their little tiny yeah. swimmers trying to, like...
Like, the physical reality of it is, like, why? No, I don't want to think about... I don't want to visualize your sperm. Anyway, apparently she's into it. Felt its warm pooling, and suddenly the sparks between her legs turned into flames.
Fuck off. She's coming imagining the pool... No.
She's coming feeling... His jizz.
Get fucked. I'm sorry. I draw the line. Even God's powers are not that strong.
And then...
It's blasphemous.
And then... She had no idea how long it lasted. Seconds? Minutes? But when she opened her eyes, Doug was propped up above her, resting on his elbows. His eyes shined. Was he crying?
What the... I'm sorry. No. No.
So, my note here that I have says, the story finishes, Doug cries, and she prays. And that's essentially the end. She says, thank you, she thought, a silent prayer forming in her mind. Thank you.
If God can't read thoughts, then how's he going to get that message?
Well, I mean, you're so right. It says, thank you for this gift. She felt a bright flutter in her chest of hope, of joy, of grateful satisfaction.
I mean, I get a flutter after a good orgasm, but normally it comes through, like, clitoral stimulation. No, okay. I take real issue at the end of that. You had me. And you lost me real hard.
Yeah, no, I also got a little lost in the end there. But here's a question. This is, I mean, maybe we should put a content warning about blasphemy. But would you...
For all our
religious listeners. Would you bang Jesus?
Oh my God.
You know what's a threesome I would be tempted by?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, Mary Magdalene, and myself.
Wow, what a threesome. I would absolutely bang Mary Magdalene, 100%.
Yeah.
What a coy strategic bitch, you know? Like, I'm into it.
Yeah, no, I would definitely bang Mary Magdalene. I would probably bang Judas over Jesus.
Oh, Judas? He's got, like, some, like, real
he's the bad
hot
boy.
Energy.
He's the biblical bad boy. He's got big dick energy all up in this. Like, you betrayed the Son of God. Like, that is a mic drop.
You are not fucking around.
Like, you were like up there with the guy that stabbed Caesar in the back.
Was it Brutus?
Oh, Brutus.
Yeah, I would absolutely bang Judas. Absolutely would bang Mary Magdalene. Would also bang the other Mary. Maybe not while she's pregnant.
The Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
Why?
you know that she's like, she is a little kinky minx on the sly. Like, she came up with this really, really good cover. So, yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, okay, that's fair.
I mean, that's, in a barn? Hello.
That's pretty much all of the disciples that I know. Judas. I'm sure there's a John and a Mark and a, you know, like, but I don't know them personally.
Surely. Wow, that took a... What about God? Would you fuck God?
I mean, is God a woman? Probably, you know?
I mean, I feel like it would be a weird line to draw if you're like, I will fuck a cloud, but I will not fuck God.
I would fuck almost... I don't think there is an actor who has played God that I would not fuck. Ooh, except for Steve Buscemi. You know what? I would fuck Steve Buscemi.
Whoa. This is some groundbreaking content we're creating right now.
I just feel like... I feel like he'd be fun. That's all.
I also feel like it would be a real laugh. Like, yeah. I feel like he'd just have a really good time of it.
Yeah, no, I feel like it'd just be good. But anyway, circling back, we've gone off track. Essentially, we were talking about, you know, read these blogs, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to put forward this, the argument of one of the women who was anti-erotica. And a lot of it is based on this idea of sexual immorality.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying, you know, we define morality by God's will. And so sexual immorality is anything that goes against God's will for our sexuality. And to find God's will, you go to the Bible and you go to all of these things. And she says, the obvious ones for God's will is sex is to be shared between a husband and a wife. After you are married, you should not have sex with others. And then she says, even if your spouse says it's okay. She's specifically talking about that. While married. And this is Corinthians. And I just like, I feel like everything bad I've read where I'm like, that's upsetting to me as a person and a woman comes from either Corinthians or Leviticus. And so this is an eyebrow raise for me. But anyway, so the first two were Genesis and Exodus. And then the last one is, while married, sex should be frequent and no one should have veto power.
Oh. Oh, dear. Oh, no. Oh, dear. I'm struck by it being mandated that it should be common. I mean, that's interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
Given that it was written by a man.
Yeah. And she also says that there are some less obvious ones. She makes an argument that sex should only be shared with your spouse. And this means that you can't have solo masturbation because you are experiencing sexuality without your spouse.
What about masturbation being a pathway to God? What about that?
I mean, what's your argument for that? There's no
biblical
background.
My argument for that is that God created the orgasm and the orgasm is magical and we should find pathways to the magic of God.
Okay. I mean, yeah, sure. And I'm sure people argue that. But
So she was compiling these arguments against reading erotica because of these air quotes facts.
Yes. Because essentially you are, because she's saying erotica is pornography. That's kind of her assumption that she's basing this argument on. She says erotica and pornography are the same thing.
Well, someone hasn't done their homework because there's quite a lot of literature that says otherwise.
We accept as Christians that pornography is immoral because you are lusting after a person who is not your spouse. And so even though these are fictional characters, you are lusting after people who are not, you know, are not your spouse. And she says, you know, people say it helped our sex life. And her argument to that is that intimacy and people's sex lives should be internally driven. And this is just like a temporary boost. It's just it's an external factor that you're using that is, you know, not... essentially like a drug. You're just going to have to keep on going back to it.
And it'll progressively get more and more, like, deviant, I imagine, and more immoral, like, because you'll keep wanting to hit that pleasure button.
Yeah, exactly. And then and she's saying, like, people say, you know, it's okay if it's a married couple, and her response is like, is it okay if it's a video of a married couple? Which I think is actually a very clever argument. Like, if you say, well, it's okay to read erotica if it's about a married couple, but you still wouldn't watch porn knowing that it's a married couple. Like, I think there's something there to be like, actually, well, what is the difference? Like,
well, I mean, I would argue that if it's a fictional married couple, there is something to be said of, like, projecting yourself into that character's position, which is probably still sinful. But if it's, like, if it's pornography, it's a video of a married couple, then that, to me, seems like there's more room for actually lusting after the person in the video rather than reading about a character which is fictional, so not a real person, but also could actually just act as a vehicle for yourself and your partner.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good argument.
I should probably write to her, I think.
Yeah, I think she'd be real open to hearing your opinions. But anyway, and then she goes to, like, what's the difference between reading the Song of Solomon or this blog, which is about, you know, sex issues within Christianity, and reading a Christian erotica? And she's like, it's intent. I do not intend to arouse you, which she does not. So, well
she,
done.
She was accurate. I was not aroused.
But I think, like, it's such a space. Like, you know, one of the first things I sent to you was this YouTube video of these two.
Yeah, that was
these two women talking about erotica, and they were two young Christian women who one of them was married, one of them wasn't, and were just so like, it's a sin. Don't read it. You are on the path to whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, that video I found, like, quite striking because it was recent and they are quite young, and it's just such a completely different world to the one that I live in. But what I found really funny and sad at the same time, actually, about that video was that the married woman was making the point that that by engaging with this kind of material, this kind of erotic material, that you could actually end up making yourself unhappy in your married life because you're creating a desire for something that cannot be fulfilled. And I was just like, oh girl, my heart breaks for you. Like, telling on yourself and your terrible marital sex right now.
Like, I think that's fundamentally it, right? That there are people who are like, this improves our sex life because we get ideas, and we, particularly when you're coming from a culture that doesn't talk about sex, like, where are you going to find anything other than just, you know, the go-to missionary kind of vibes? And then there are the people who are saying, like, oh well, it makes you lust after this thing. It makes you think that your partner is not satisfactory. I think that's kind of part of it. Like, it makes you think about something that your partner's not currently doing. And it's like, okay, well, but then they can do it, you know?
Yeah. Like, it seems like a path to making it satisfactory. So something that I looked into a little bit, which I think is really interesting, is purity culture. And in particular, this idea of extreme abstinence. Have you heard about extreme abstinence before?
No.
It is what it sounds like.
Isn't, like, abstinence is extreme?
What is exactly, right?
What's extreme abstinence?
It's essentially a subculture of, like, quite extremely conservative Christians and evangelical Christians. And it's all about promoting sexual abstinence prior to marriage, which, of course, that's pretty standard. But it kind of goes beyond ideas of sex to promote, you know, ideas about how women should be particularly subservient to men, and about male authority, about women, how women should not pursue leadership roles, should not speak up too much around company and things like that. So it kind of, like, takes it to a broader level. And for women, it also means being responsible for the boys and for the men, and being responsible to not tempt them towards sin, which again is kind of like an idea that comes up a bit already, but it's, like, heightened in this sort of extreme abstinence purity culture. And something that struck me like straight off the bat was like, kind of like what you were saying before, like I think it's kind of easy, or it happens a lot, to sort of poke fun at the idea of these kinds of ideas and religion and whatnot being in our like lefty liberal circles.
Yeah,
it's pretty, you know, that happens a lot. But I think the reality is that these ideas come out to play much more broadly than just in conservative religious circles. Like these ideas directly tie into victim blaming and like traditional gender roles and inequality in the workplace. Like
our entire legal and political system is a Judeo-Christian system. Like it was created in a time where religion was massively influential in politics. And yeah, we're a secular country now, but our founding principles are based off Christian principles.
And I mean, we still absolutely have people in positions of power who are pushing air quotes family values, which are just really masked Christian values.
Yeah, exactly. And when we talk about, you know, Australian values, and there I'm talking about white Australia, again, it's Christian. Like that's what we're putting forward. That's what people are talking about. They don't say it because in Australia, I think in some ways, unlike the US, like secularism is such an important thing to so many people, whether or not they, you know, call it secularism. But the idea that our politics is separate from the church is so important to people that often it gets hidden, and people don't realize that a lot of our morality and a lot of our legal framework still comes from these really Christian values. And so what we consider to be right has come out of Christian values, which means that we're still taking on these, even if you have nothing to do with religion, you're still taking on these values in your like day-to-day life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even now, and we won't go into it because we'll be here forever, but like even now at the moment, I'm working in around this online safety bill. And it's all about questioning, you know, what should and shouldn't be online. And it comes back down to the National Classification Code, which comes back down to this moral decision making, you know? It's wild. Anyway, purity culture, it really like reinforces this. And so we're talking about things like purity rings that girls will wear from the age of 16 until they get married. And then they gift it to their husband as like a symbol of their purity, their virginity. And it's like losing your virginity is framed as a direct way to like lose your faith. Like other sins, you can
bounce back,
confess. Yeah, you can bounce back. But if you lose your virginity, you're fucking done, you know? So there's this book called I Kissed Dating Goodbye, which is written by Joshua Harris. And it's essentially, it looks like a romance novel. Like the cover looks like a romance novel. And it really, you know, I was reading these things written by these women who read it and, you know, adopted it as like their doctrine, essentially. This Joshua Harris guy was seen as the prophet of purity culture. And it goes beyond just not having sex, but not dating, like not being involved at all. And like very rigid rules about what you can and can't do. To lead a pure life under purity culture.
I wonder about that, because it's, to me, it's like quite a dangerous thing to do, to just like completely opt out of these situations that are the situations that you learn from in your later life, and the ways you react to people and the things that you think are appropriate and that are not appropriate, you know? You become an adult who hasn't had any of these experiences.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not necessarily like having sex. You know, have sex when you want to, but limiting interactions with people and like all of the restrictions is.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I read was this woman who described how she essentially stayed within a sexually abusive partnership for years because she so deeply believed that because they had sex, that no one would want her after that because she was, and I quote, disgusting garbage. And that directly came from the culture that was built around this book, which is deeply harming.
Mm.
But then what happened is Joshua Harris, who was 21 when this book was published, turned around in 2018 and denounced all of this stuff. And so now there's this big outpouring happening of all of these women who have completely bought into this ideology. And now they're like, the fuck? Like, you've just left? And he was like, he posted a statement and he was like, "To those who read my book and were misdirected or unhelpfully influenced by it, I am sincerely sorry." And I just like, that is such a fucking cop-out. Like, he sold over 1 million copies of this book and had immense influence on purity culture, especially in the US, but also in Australia. There's quite a bit of it in Australia as well. And then just was like, oh, whoops, sorry.
Yeah, what happened to all that money? Donate it to a women's shelter or something.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot out there that documents like quite severe trauma and PTSD that these women in particular, I mean, most of the stuff that I read was about women who are like suffering deeply as a result of really toxic purity culture.
And obviously, and we haven't spoken about it because, you know, we can't get to every topic on this, but obviously, you know, this kind of rhetoric is incredibly harmful towards LGBTIQ people as well, and trying to reconcile growing up with religion and being on God's path and also being LGBTIQ+. It's obviously another just whole other podcast worth of discussion that. But I think it comes back to kind of the things you were saying. Like, I've grown up around a lot of really, really beautiful examples of deeply religious people who are wonderful people and very important people in my life. But I think part of the thing that I've noticed with all of the people in my life that are religious is that it's their faith and it's their belief, and it's not about other people, and it's not about what other people do, and it's not, you know, like, and it's not about these really strict rules about what is and is not a thing. It's about reflection. It's about, essentially, a lot of it is kind of prayer as meditation, really. And that's, you know, that's just part of their life, and that's great. And like, it can give people a lot of meaning.
Totally. And I don't want it to come across as though I'm being dismissive of that. The issue I have is when it's not, you know, your own personal faith, your own personal practices, reflection, whatever gives you meaning in life, fine. But if you're actively pushing an agenda onto others, you know, that comes with consequences.
Mm. And I mean, like, religion as a community organization, as a community group is wonderful, but then you're then also getting into organized religion, you know, the Vatican.
We're just gonna drop the Vatican in right at the end.
They're definitely gonna. I'm sure they have like a Google alert or something as soon as like anybody talks about them. We're gonna like, someone's gonna turn up at our door.
We will be smoted.
We will be smote.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.